But Thibault said nothing. In the silence, Elizabeth put a hand on his knee.
What do you think?
I'm getting the sense I don't really have a choice.
Of course you have a choice.
Nana won't force you to do it. Even though she promised?
She'd probably understand. Eventually.
She placed a hand over her heart.
Once her broken heart healed, I'm sure she'd even forgive you.
Ah, he said.
And most likely, it wouldn't make her health any worse, either. What with the stroke and all, and the disappointment she'd feel. I'm sure she wouldn't end up bedridden or anything.
Thibault cracked a smile. Don't you think you're overdoing it? Elizabeth's eyes sparkled with mischief.
Maybe. But the question is, will you do it?
I suppose.
Good. And you know you're going to have to practice tomorrow.
Okay. It might be a long rehearsal. Friday rehearsals are always long. They really love their music, you know. Great, he said, and sighed.
Look at it this way. You won't have to work in the rain all day.
Great, he said again. She kissed him on the cheek.
You're a good man. I'll be silently cheering for you in the pews.
Thanks.
Oh, and when Nana comes out, don't let her know I told you.
I won't.
And try to be more excited, honored even, like you couldn't imagine that you'd ever be offered such a wonderful opportunity.
I can't just say yes.
No, Nana will want you to be thrilled. Like I said, it means a lot to her.
Ah, he said again. He took her hand in his.
You do realize you simply could have asked me.
I didn't need the whole guilt-inducing story.
I know, she said. But it was a lot more fun to ask the other way.
As if on cue, Nana stepped outside. She flashed a quick smile at both of them before wandering to the railing and turning toward him.
Do you ever play the piano anymore? Nana asked.
It was all Thibault could do not to laugh. Thibault met with the music director the following afternoon, and despite her initial dismay at his jeans, t-shirt, and long hair, it didn't take long for her to realize that Thibault not only could play, but was obviously an accomplished musician. Once he'd warmed up, he made very few errors, though it helped that the chosen musical pieces weren't terribly challenging. After rehearsal, when the pastor showed up, he was walked through the service so he'd know exactly what to expect. Nana, meanwhile, alternately beamed at Thibault and chattered away with her friends, explaining that Thibault worked at the kennel and was spending time with Beth. Thibault could feel the gazes of the women sweep over him with more than a little interest, and for the most part, approval. On the way out the door, Nana looped her arm through his.
You were better than a duck on a stick, she said.
Thanks, he said, mystified.
Are you up for a little drive?
Where?
Wilmington. If we go now, I think I can have you back in time to take Beth to dinner. I'll watch Ben.
What am I going to buy?
A sport jacket and chinos. A dressier shirt.
I don't mind you in jeans, but if you're going to play the piano at the service on Sunday, you're going to need to dress up.
Ah,
he said, recognizing at once that he had no choice in the matter. That evening, while dining at Cantina, the only Mexican restaurant downtown, Elizabeth stared over her margarita at Thibault.
You know you're in like Flynn now, she said.
With Nana?
She couldn't stop talking about how good you were, and how polite you were to her friends, and how respectful you sounded when the pastor showed up.
You make it sound like she expected me to be a troglodyte. She laughed.
Maybe she did. I heard you were covered in mud before you went.
I showered and changed.
I know. She told me that, too.
What didn't she tell you?
That the other women in the choir were swooning.
She said that?
No, she didn't have to, but I could see it in her face. They were. It's not every day a young and handsome stranger comes into their church and dazzles them on the piano. How could they not swoon?
I think you're probably overstating things.
I think, she said, dabbing her finger on the rim of her glass and tasting the salt, that you still have a lot to learn about living in a small southern town. This is big news. Abigail has played for 15 years.
I'm not going to take her spot. This is temporary.
Even better. It'll give people a chance to pick sides. They'll talk about it for years.
This is what people do here?
Absolutely, she said. And by the way, there's no faster way to get accepted around here.
I don't need to be accepted by anyone but you.
Oh, he's the sweet talker, she smiled. Okay, how about this? It'll drive Keith crazy.
Why?
Because he's a member of the church. In fact, Ben will be with him when he sees you. It'll kill him to see how much everyone appreciates the way you pitched in to help.
I'm not sure I want him any angrier. I'm already worried about what he's going to do.
He can't do anything. I know what he's been up to.
I wouldn't be so sure, Thibault cautioned.
Why do you say that?
Thibault noted the crowded tables surrounding them. She seemed to read his mind and slid out from her side of the booth to sit beside him.
You know something you're not telling me, she whispered. What is it?
Thibault took a sip of his beer. When he put the bottle back on the table, he described his encounters with her ex, as well as what had happened the previous weekend. As he told the story, her expression changed from disgusted to amused, finally settling into something resembling concern.
You should have told me earlier, she said, frowning. I didn't get concerned until he broke into my house. And you really think he's capable of setting you up?
You know him better than I do. She realized she wasn't hungry anymore.
I thought I did.
Because Ben was with his father, a situation that felt somewhat surreal to both of them considering the circumstances, Thibault and Elizabeth went to Raleigh on Saturday, which made it easier to avoid dwelling on what Keith Clayton might or might not do. In the afternoon, they had lunch at a sidewalk cafe downtown and visited the Museum of Natural History. On Saturday evening, they made their way to Chapel Hill. North Carolina was playing Clemson, and the game was being broadcast on ESPN. Though the game was in South Carolina, the bars downtown were packed, full of students watching it on giant flat-screen televisions. As Thibault heard them cheering and booing as if the future of the world hung on the outcome of the game, he found himself thinking about the kids their age serving in Iraq and wondered what they would make of these college students. They didn't stay long. After an hour, Elizabeth was ready to leave. On their way back to the car, as they walked with their arms around each other, she leaned her head against his shoulder.
That was fun, she said, but it was so loud in there.
You just say that because you're getting old. She squeezed his waist, liking the fact that there was nothing but skin and muscle there.
Watch it, bub, or you might not get lucky tonight.
Bub? He repeated.
It's a term of endearment. I say it to all the guys I date.
All of them?
Yep, strangers too. Like if they give me their seat on the bus, I might say, thanks, bub.
I guess I should feel special.
Then don't you forget it.
They walked among the throngs of students on Franklin Street, peeking in windows and soaking up the energy. It made sense to Thibault that she'd wanted to come here. This was an experience she'd missed because of Ben. Yet what impressed him most was that although she was obviously enjoying herself, she didn't seem wistful or bitter about what she'd missed. If anything, she acted more like an observant anthropologist, intent on studying newfound cultures. When he said as much, she rolled her eyes.
Don't ruin the evening. Trust me, I'm not thinking that deep. I just wanted to get out of town and have some fun.
They went to Thibault's and stayed up late, talking and kissing and making love well into the night. When Thibault woke in the morning, he found Elizabeth lying beside him, studying his face.
What are you doing? He murmured, his voice thick with sleep. Watching you, she said. Why? I wanted to.
He smiled as he ran a finger over her arm, feeling a surge of gratitude for her presence in his life.
You're pretty awesome, Elizabeth.
I know.
That's it? You're just going to say, I know? He demanded in mock outrage.
Don't get needy on me. I hate needy guys.
And I'm not sure I like women who hide their feelings. She smiled, leaning in to kiss him.
I had a great time yesterday.
I did too.
I mean it. These last few weeks, being with you, have been the best weeks of my life. And yesterday, just being with you. You have no idea what that was like. Just being a woman. Not a mother, not a teacher, not a granddaughter. Just me. It's been a long time since that has happened.
We've gone out before.
I know, but it's different now.
She was talking about the future, he knew. A future that had acquired a clarity and purpose it never had before. Staring at her, he knew exactly what she meant.
So what's next? He asked, his tone serious.
She kissed him again, her breath on his lips warm and moist.
Next is getting up. You have to be at the church in a couple of hours.
She swatted him on the hip. That's a lot of time.
Maybe for you. But I'm here and my clothes are at home. You got to get up and start getting ready so I have time to get ready.
This church stuff is tough.
Sure, she said. It's not like you have an option. And by the way,
she reached for his hand before going on,
you're pretty awesome too, Logan.
Chapter 23 Beth.
I really like him, Nana, said Beth.
Standing in the bathroom, she was doing her best with the curling iron, though she suspected that in the rain all would be for naught. After a brief respite the day before, the first of the two tropical storms that were expected had entered the area.
I think it's time you start being honest with me. You just don't like him. You think he's the one. I'm not that obvious,
Beth said, not wanting to believe it.
Yes, you are. You might as well be sitting on the front porch picking petals off a daisy.
Beth grinned.
Believe it or not, I actually understood that metaphor.
Nana waved her off.
Accidents happen. The point is, I know you like him. The question is, does he like you? Yes, Nana. Have you asked what that mean-ass means? I know what it means.
Just making sure, she said. She glanced in the mirror and adjusted her hair.
Because I like him, too.
She drove with Nana toward Logan's house, worried that her wipers couldn't keep up with the rain. Seemingly endless storms had swelled the river. Though the water didn't quite reach the street, it was almost lapping at its edges. A few more days of this, she thought, and roads would begin closing. Businesses closest to the river would soon be stacking sandbags to prevent water from ruining low-lying merchandise.
I wonder if anyone is going to make it to the church today,
Beth remarked.
I can barely see beyond my window.
A little rain won't keep people away from the Lord, Nana intoned.
It's more than a little rain. Have you seen the river?
I saw it. It's definitely angry.
If it gets any higher, we might not be able to make it into town.
It'll all work out, she declared. Beth glanced across at her.
You're in a good mood today.
Aren't you, since you stayed out all night?
Nana,
Beth protested. I'm not judging, just mentioning. You're an adult and it's your life.
Beth had long grown used to her grandmother's pronouncements. I appreciate that.
So it's going well, even with your ex trying to cause trouble?
I think so.
Do you think he's a keeper?
I think it's a little early to even consider something like that. We're still getting to know each other.
Nana leaned forward and wiped at the condensation on the window. Though the moisture disappeared momentarily, fingerprint smudges remained. I knew right away that your grandfather was the one.
He told me that the two of you dated for 6 months before he proposed.
We did, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't have said yes earlier. I knew within a few days that he was the one for me. I know how crazy that sounds, but being with him was like toast and butter from the very beginning.
Her smile was gentle, her eyes half closed as she remembered.
I was sitting with him in the park. It must have been the second or third time we'd ever been alone, and we were talking about birds, when a young boy, obviously from out in the county, wandered up to listen. His face was dirty. He didn't have shoes, and his clothes, as ragged as they were, didn't even fit him. Your grandfather winked at him before going on, as if to tell the boy he was welcome to stay, and the boy kind of smiled. It touched me to think that he didn't pass judgment based on the way the boy looked. She paused. Your grandfather kept on talking. He must have known the name of every kind of bird in this part of the state. He'd tell us whether they migrated and where they nested, and the sound of their calls. After a while, this young boy sat right down and just stared as your grandfather made everything sound, well, enchanting. And it wasn't just the young boy. I felt it, too. Your grandfather had this soothing, lullaby-like voice, and while he talked, I got the sense that he was the kind of person who couldn't hold anger for more than a few minutes, because it just wasn't in him. It could never grow into resentment or bitterness, and I knew then that he was the kind of man who would be married forever. And I decided then and there that I should be the one to marry him.
Despite her familiarity with Nana's stories, Beth found herself moved.
That's a wonderful story. He was a wonderful man. And when a man is that special, you know it sooner than you think possible. You recognize it instinctively, and you're certain that no matter what happens, there will never be another one like him.
By that point, Beth had reached Logan's gravel drive, and as she turned in and approached the house, bouncing and splashing through the mud, she caught sight of him standing on the porch, dressed in what seemed to be a new sport jacket and a pair of freshly pressed chinos. When he waved, she couldn't suppress an ear-to-ear smile. The service began and ended with music. Nana's solo was greeted with hearty applause, and the pastor singled out both Logan and Nana, thanking Logan for filling in at the last minute, and Nana for demonstrating the wonder of God's grace in the face of a challenge. The sermon was informative, interesting, and delivered with the humble recognition that God's mysterious works aren't always understood. Beth felt that their gifted pastor was one of the reasons membership in the church continued to grow. From her seat in the upper balcony, she could easily see both Nana and Logan. Whenever Ben was with his father for the weekend, she liked to sit in the same spot, so Ben would know where to find her. Usually, he caught her eye two or three times during the service. Today, he turned around constantly, sharing his awe at the fact that he was friends with someone so accomplished. But Beth kept her distance from her ex, not because of what she'd recently learned about him, though that was reason enough, but because it made things easier on Ben. Despite Keith's lascivious impulses, in church he behaved as though he viewed her presence as a dangerously disruptive force that might somehow upset his clan. Gramp sat in the center of the first row, with the family fanning out on either side and in the row behind him. From her spot, she could see him read along with the Bible passages, take notes, and listen intently to everything the pastor said. He sang every word to every hymn. Out of the entire family, Beth liked him the best. He'd always been fair with her and unfailingly polite, unlike most of the others. After church, if they happened to bump into each other, he always remarked that she was looking well and thanked her for the admirable job she was doing with Ben. There was honesty in the way he spoke to her, but there was a line in the sand as well. She understood that she wasn't to rock the boat. He knew she was a far better parent than Keith, and that Ben was turning into a fine young man because of her. But that knowledge didn't override the fact that Ben was, and always would be, a Clayton. Still, she liked him, despite everything, despite Keith, despite the line in the sand. Ben liked him too,
and half the time, she got the sense that Gramps demanded Keith show up with Ben to spare Ben from having to be alone with his father for the entire weekend. All of those realities were far from her mind as she watched Logan play the piano. She hadn't known what to expect. How many people took lessons? How many people claimed to be able to play well? It didn't take long to realize Logan was exceptionally skilled, far above the level she'd expected. His fingers moved effortlessly and fluidly over the keys. He didn't even seem to read the music in front of him. Instead, as Nana sang, he focused his attention on her while keeping perfect rhythm and pace, more interested in her performance than his own. As he continued to play, she couldn't help thinking about the story that Nana had recounted in the car. Tuning out the service, she found herself recalling easy conversations with Logan, the feel of his solid embrace, his natural way with Ben. Admittedly, there was a lot she still didn't know about him, but she did know this. He completed her in a way that she'd never thought possible. Knowledge isn't everything, she told herself, and she knew then that in Nana's words, he was the toast to her butter. After the service, Beth stood in the background, amused by the thought that Logan was being treated like a rock star. Okay, a rock star with fans who collected Social Security checks, but as far as she could tell, he seemed both flattered and flustered by the unexpected attention. She caught him looking at her, silently pleading for her to rescue him. Instead, she simply shrugged and smiled. She didn't want to intrude. When the pastor came up to thank him for a second time for filling in, he suggested that Logan might want to consider playing even after Abigail's wrist was healed. "I'm sure we'd be able to work something out," the pastor urged. She was most surprised when Gramps, with Ben at his side, made his way over to Logan as well. Like Moses parting the Red Sea, Gramps didn't have to wait amid the throng to offer his compliments. In the distance, Beth saw Keith, his expression a mixture of anger and disgust. "Fine job, young man," Gramps said, offering his hand. "You play as if you've been blessed." She could see from Logan's expression that he recognized the man, though she had no idea how. He shook Gramps' hand. "Thank you, sir."
"He works at the kennel with Nana," Ben piped up, "and I think him and Mom are dating."
At that, a stillness fell over the throng of admirers, punctuated by a few uncomfortable coughs. Gramps stared at Logan, though she couldn't read his reaction.
"Is that right?" he said.
"Yes, sir," Logan answered. Gramps said nothing.
"He was in the Marines, too," Ben offered,
oblivious to the social currents eddying around him. When Gramps seemed surprised, Logan nodded. "I served with the 1st/5th out of Pendleton, sir." After a pregnant pause, Gramps nodded.
"Then thank you for your service to our country as well. You did a marvelous job today."
"Thank you, sir," he said again.
"You were so polite,"
Beth observed when they were back home. She'd said nothing about what had gone on until Nana was out of earshot. Outside, the lawn was beginning to resemble a lake, and still the rain continued to fall. They'd picked up Zeus on the way back, and he lay nestled at their feet.
"Why wouldn't I be?"
She made a face.
"You know why."
"He's not your ex." He shrugged.
"I doubt he has any idea what your ex is doing."
"Why? Do you think I should have clocked him?"
"Absolutely not."
"I didn't think so. But I did happen to see your ex while I was talking to the grandfather. He looked as though he just swallowed a worm."
"You noticed that, too? I thought it was kind of funny."
"He's not going to be happy."
"Then he can join the club," she said. "After what he did, he deserves to eat a worm."
Logan nodded, and she snuggled up to him. He lifted his arm and pulled her close.
"You looked mighty handsome up there while you were playing."
"Yeah?"
"I know I shouldn't have been thinking that since I was at church, but I couldn't help it. You should wear a sport jacket more often."
I don't have the kind of job that requires one.
Maybe you have the kind of girlfriend who does.
He pretended to be puzzled.
I have a girlfriend?
She nudged him playfully before looking up at him. She kissed him on the cheek.
Thanks for coming to Hampton and deciding to stay.
He smiled. I didn't have a choice.
2 hours later, right before dinner, Beth saw Keith's car plow through puddles on the way up the drive. Ben scrambled out of the car. Keith already had the car in reverse and was pulling away before Ben reached the front steps.
Hey, Mom! Hey, Tebow!
Logan waved as Beth stood up.
Hey, sweetie,
Beth said. She gave him a hug.
Did you have a good time?
I didn't have to clean the kitchen or take out the trash.
Good,
she said.
And you know what?
What?
Ben shook the water from his raincoat.
I think I want to learn how to play the piano.
Beth smiled, thinking, why am I not surprised?
Hey, Tebow?
Logan raised his chin.
Yeah? Do you want to see my treehouse?
Beth cut in.
Honey, with a storm and all, I'm not sure that's a good idea.
It's fine. Grandpa built it, and I was there just a couple of days ago.
The water's probably higher.
Please, we won't stay long, and Tebow will be with me the whole time.
Against her better judgment, Beth agreed. Chapter 24 Clayton. Clayton didn't want to believe it, but there was Gramps actually complimenting Thibault after church. Shaking his hand, acting like he was some sort of hero, while Ben stared up at Thibault with big puppy dog eyes. It was all he could do to make it through brunch without cracking open a beer, and since dropping Ben at his mother's, he'd already gone through four. He was pretty sure he'd finish off the 12-pack before turning in. In the past 2 weeks, he'd had a lot of beer. He knew he was overdoing it, but it was the only thing that kept him from dwelling on the latest run-in with Thibault. Behind him, the phone rang. Again. Fourth time in the last couple of hours, but he wasn't in the mood to answer it. Okay, he admitted it. He had underestimated the guy. Thibault had been one step ahead of him from the very beginning. He used to think Ben knew how to press his buttons. This guy dropped bombs. No, Clayton thought suddenly. He didn't drop bombs. He directed cruise missiles with pinpoint accuracy, all geared toward the destruction of Clayton's life. Even worse, Clayton hadn't seen it coming. Not once. It was beyond frustrating, especially since the situation seemed to be getting worse. Now Thibault was telling him what to do, ordering him around, like he was some flunky on payroll, and for the life of him, Clayton couldn't figure a way out. He wanted to believe that Thibault had been bluffing about videotaping the break-in. He had to be bluffing. No one was that smart. He had to be. But what if he wasn't? Clayton went to the refrigerator and opened another beer, knowing he couldn't risk it. Who knew what the guy was planning next? He took a long pull, praying for the numbing effect to kick in soon. This should have been easier to handle. He was a deputy sheriff, and the guy was new in town. Clayton should have had the power all along, but instead he found himself sitting in a messy kitchen because he hadn't wanted to ask Ben to clean it for fear the kid would tell Thibault, which just might spell the end of Clayton's life as he knew it. What did the guy have against him? That's what Clayton wanted to know. Clayton wasn't the one causing problems. Thibault was the one making things difficult. And, to rub salt in the wound, the guy was sleeping with Beth as well. He took another drink, wondering how his life could have turned to crap so quickly. Sunk in misery, he barely registered the sound of someone knocking at the front door. He pushed back from the table and stumbled through the living room. When he opened the door, he saw Tony standing on the porch, looking like a drowned rat. As if everything else weren't bad enough, the worm was here. Tony took a step back.
Whoa, dude! You okay?
You smell like you've been drinking.
What do you want, Tony?
He wasn't in the mood for this.
I've been trying to call you, but you didn't pick up.
Get to the point.
I haven't seen you around much lately.
I've been busy, and I'm busy now, so go away. He started to close the door, and Tony raised his hand.
Wait! I have something to tell you,
he whined.
It's important.
What is it?
Do you remember when I called you? I don't know. It must have been a couple of months ago.
No.
You remember? I called you from Decker's about this guy showing Beth's picture around.
And?
That's what I wanted to tell you.
He pushed a clump of greasy hair out of his eyes.
I saw him again today, and I saw him talking to Beth.
What are you talking about?
After church. He was talking to Beth and your grandfather. He was the dude on the piano today.
Despite the buzz, Clayton felt his head begin to clear. It came back to him, vaguely at first, then sharper. That was the weekend Thibault had taken the camera and disc.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'd remember that dude anywhere. He had Beth's picture?
I already told you that. I saw it. I just thought it was weird, you know. And then I see them together today. I thought you'd want to know.
Clayton processed Tony's news. I want you to tell me everything you can remember about the picture. Tony the Worm had a surprisingly good memory, and it didn't take long for Clayton to get the full story. That the picture was a few years old and had been taken at the fair, that Thibault didn't know her name, that Thibault was looking for her. After Tony left, Clayton continued to ponder what he'd learned. No way had Thibault been here 5 years ago and forgotten her name. So where did he get the picture? Had he walked across the country to find her? And if so, what did that mean? That he'd stalked her? He wasn't sure yet, but something wasn't right. And Beth, naive as usual, had allowed him not only into her bed, but into Ben's life as well. He frowned. He didn't like it. He didn't like it at all. And he was pretty sure Beth wouldn't like it either.
Chapter 25. Tebow.
So that's it, huh? Despite the canopy offered by the trees, Tebow was drenched by the time he and Ben reached the treehouse. Water poured from the raincoat he was wearing, and his new pants were soaked below the knees. Inside his boots, his socks squished unpleasantly. Ben, on the other hand, was bundled from head to toe in a hooded rain suit. On his feet, he wore Nana's rubber boots. Aside from his face, Tebow doubted he even noticed the rain.
This is how we reach it. It's awesome, isn't it?
Ben motioned to an oak tree on the near side of the creek. A series of nailed 2x4s climbed the side of the trunk.
All we have to do is climb the tree ladder here so we can cross the bridge.
Tebow noticed with apprehension that the creek had already swollen to twice its normal size, and the water was moving fast. Turning his attention to the small bridge, he saw that it was composed of three parts. A fraying rope bridge led from the oak tree on the near side toward a central landing station in the center of the creek that was supported by 4 listing pillars. This landing was connected by another rope bridge section to the platform on the treehouse. Tebow noticed the debris deposited around the pillars by the rushing waters. Though he hadn't previously inspected the bridge, he suspected that the relentless storms and rapid flow of water had weakened the landing support. Before he could say anything, Ben had already scaled the tree ladder to the bridge. Ben grinned at him from above.
Come on! What are you waiting for?
Tebow raised his arm to shield his face from the rain, feeling a sudden sense of dread. I'm not sure this is a good idea.
Chicken!
Ben taunted. He started across, the bridge swaying from side to side as he ran.
Wait!
Tebow shouted to no effect. By then, Ben had already reached the central landing. Tebow climbed the tree ladder and stepped cautiously onto the rope bridge. The waterlogged board sagged under his weight. As soon as Ben saw him coming, he scrambled up the last section to the treehouse. Tebow's breath caught in his throat as Ben hopped up on the treehouse's platform. It bowed under Ben's weight, but held steady. Ben turned around, his grin wide. "Come on back," Tebow shouted. "I don't think the bridge will hold me."
"It'll hold. My grandpa built it."
"Please, Ben."
"Chicken,"
Ben taunted again. It was obvious that Ben considered the whole thing a game. Tebow took another look at the bridge, concluding that if he moved slowly, it might be safe. Ben had run. Lots of torque and impact pressure. Would it hold the weight of Tebow's body? With his first step, the boards, drenched and ancient, sagged under his weight. Dry rot, no doubt. Tebow's mind flashed on a photograph in his pocket. The creek swirled and spun, a torrent beneath his feet. No time to lose. He walked slowly and reached the central landing, then started up the last suspended section of the rope bridge. Noting the rickety platform, he doubted it would support their combined weight simultaneously. In his pocket, the photograph felt as if it were on fire.
"I'll meet you inside," Tebow said, trying to sound offhand. "You don't have to wait in the rain for an old man like me."
Thankfully, Ben laughed and ducked into the treehouse. Tebow breathed a sigh of relief as he made the shaky rise to the platform. He took a large, quick step to avoid the platform and stumbled into the treehouse.
"This is where I keep my Pokemon cards," Ben said, ignoring his entrance and motioning to the tin boxes in the corner. "I've got a Charizard card and a Mewtwo."
Tebow wiped the rain from his face as he collected himself and sat on the floor. "That's great," he said, puddles from his rain gear collecting around him. He took in the tiny room. Toys lay heaped in the corners, and a cut-out window exposed much of the interior to the elements, soaking the unsanded planks. The only piece of furniture was a single beanbag chair in the corner.
"This is my hideout," Ben said, collapsing into the chair.
"Yeah?"
"I come here when I get mad, like when kids at school are mean."
Tebow leaned back against the wall, shaking the water from his sleeves.
"What do they do?" "Stuff, you know," he shrugged. "Teasing me about how I play basketball or kickball or why I have to wear glasses."
"That must be hard."
"It doesn't bother me."
Ben didn't seem to notice his obvious contradiction, and Tebow went on. "What do you like most about being here?"
"The quiet," said Ben.
"When I'm here, no one asks me questions or asks me to do stuff. I can sit here and think." Tebow nodded. "Makes sense." Through the window, he could see the rising wind beginning to drive the rain sideways. The storm was getting worse.
"What do you think about?" he asked.
Ben shrugged.
"Like growing up and stuff? Getting older?"
He paused.
"I wish I was bigger."
"Why?"
"There's this kid in my class who always picks on me. He's mean. Yesterday, he pushed me down in the cafeteria."
The treehouse rocked in a gust of wind. Again, the photo seemed to burn, and Tebow absently found his hand wandering to his pocket. He didn't understand the compulsion, but before he realized what he was doing, he pulled out the photo. Outside, the wind continued to howl, and he could hear branches slapping against the structure. With every passing minute, he knew the rain was engorging the creek. All at once, an image arose of the treehouse platform collapsing, with Ben trapped in the raging water beneath it.
"I want to give you something," Tebow said,
the words out before he'd even consciously thought them.
"I think it'll take care of your problem."
"What is it?" Tebow swallowed.
"It's a picture of your mom."
Ben took the photo and looked at it, his expression curious.
What do I do with it?
Thibault leaned forward and tapped the corner of the photo. Just carry it with you. My friend Victor called it a lucky charm. He said it's what kept me safe in Iraq.
For real?
That was the question, wasn't it? After a long moment, Thibault nodded. I promise.
Cool.
Will you do me a favor? Thibault asked.
What?
Will you keep this between the two of us? And promise to keep it with you? Ben considered it.
Can I fold it?
I don't think it matters. Ben thought about it.
Sure,
he finally said, folding it over and slipping it into his pocket.
Thanks.
It was the first time in over 5 years that the photo had ever been farther from him than the distance to the shower or the sink, and the sense of loss disoriented him. Somehow, Thibault hadn't expected to feel its absence so acutely. As he watched Ben cross the bridge and he caught sight of the raging creek, the feeling only intensified. When Ben waved to him from the other side of the creek and began to descend the tree ladder, Thibault reluctantly stepped onto the platform before moving onto the bridge as fast as he could. He felt exposed as he crossed the bridge step by step, ignoring the certainty that the bridge would plunge into the creek, ignoring the fact that he no longer carried the photo. When he reached the oak tree on the other side, he breathed a shaky sigh of relief. Still, as he climbed down, he felt a nagging premonition that whatever he had come here for still wasn't over, and was, in fact, only beginning. Chapter 26. Beth. On Wednesday, Beth stared out her classroom window at lunchtime. She had never seen anything like it. Hurricanes and nor'easters had nothing on the series of storms that had recently pounded Hampton County, as well as every county from Raleigh to the coast. The problem was that unlike most tropical storms, these weren't passing quickly out to sea. Instead, they had lingered day after thunderous day, bringing nearly every river in the eastern part of the state to flood levels. Small towns along the Albemarle, Neuse, and Cape Fear rivers were already knee-deep in water, and Hampton was getting close. Another day or two of rain would mean that most of the businesses downtown would be reachable only by canoe. The county had already decided to close the schools for the rest of the week, since the school buses could no longer make their routes and only a little more than half the teachers had been able to make it in. Ben, of course, was thrilled by the idea of staying home and playing in the puddles with Zeus, but Beth was a little more leery. Both the newspapers and the local news had reported that while the South River had already risen to dangerous levels, it was going to get far worse before it got better, as the creeks and tributaries fed the rise. The two creeks that surrounded the kennel, usually a quarter mile away, could now be seen from the windows of the house, and even Logan was keeping Zeus away because of the debris washed out with the deluge. Being trapped indoors was hard on the kids, which was one of the reasons she'd stayed in her classroom. After lunch, she'd return to their classrooms where, in theory, they'd happily color or draw or read quietly in lieu of playing kickball or basketball or tag outside. In reality, kids needed to get their energy out, and she knew it. For years, she'd been asking that on days like this, they simply fold up the cafeteria lunch tables and allow the kids to run or play for 20 minutes so they could concentrate when they returned to class after lunch. Not a chance, she was told, because of regulatory issues, liability issues, janitorial union issues, and health and safety issues. When asked what that meant, she was given a long explanation, but to her, it all came down to French fries, as in, we shouldn't allow kids to slip on French fries, or, if they do slip on French fries, the school district will get sued, or the janitors would have to renegotiate their contract if they didn't clean the French fries from the cafeteria at the time they were scheduled to do so. And finally,
If someone slipped on a French fry that had fallen on the floor, the children might be exposed to harmful pathogens. Welcome to the world of lawyers, she thought. Lawyers, after all, didn't have to teach the kids after keeping them cooped up inside the classroom all day with no recess. Usually, she would have retreated to the teacher's lounge for lunch, but with so little time to set up the classroom for activities, she decided to stay and get things ready. In the corner, she was setting up a beanbag-tossing game, stored in the closet for just such emergencies, when she noted movement from the doorway. She turned that way, and it took her an instant to register who it was. The shoulders of his uniform were wet, and a few water droplets dripped from the belt where he stored his gun. In his hand was a manila file. "Hi, Beth," he said. His voice was quiet. "Do you have a minute?" She stood.
"What is it, Keith?"
"I came to apologize," he said. He clasped his hands in front of him, the picture of contrition. "I know you don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to talk to you when you were alone. I took a chance that you'd be here, but if it's not a good time, maybe we could set up another time that's better for you." She glanced at the clock.
"I've got 5 minutes," she said.
Keith stepped into the classroom and started to close the door. Midway, he paused, seeking her permission. She nodded, wanting to get whatever he had to say over with. He moved toward her, stopping at a respectful distance. "Like I said, I came here to tell you I was sorry."
"About what?"
"About the rumors you heard," he said. "I wasn't completely truthful with you." She crossed her arms.
"In other words, you lied," she stated.
"Yes."
"You lied to my face."
"Yes."
"About what?"
"You asked if I ever ran off some of the guys you've dated in the past. I don't think I did, but I didn't tell you that I did talk to some of them."
"You talked to them?"
"Yes." She did her best to keep her anger in check.
"And what? You're sorry you did it, or sorry you lied?"
"Both. I'm sorry I did it. I'm sorry I lied. I shouldn't have done those things." He paused. "I know we haven't had the greatest relationship since the divorce, and I also know that you think marrying me was a mistake. You're right about that. We weren't meant to be married, and I accept that. But between the two of us, and I'll be honest, you've had a lot more to do with this than me, we have a great son. You might not think I'm the best father in the world, but I've never once regretted having Ben or having Ben live with you most of the time. He's a great kid, and you've done a great job with him." She wasn't sure what to say. In the silence, he went on. "But I still worry, and I always have. Like I told you, I worry about who comes into Ben's life, whether it be friends or acquaintances, or even people that you might introduce to him. I know that's not fair, and that you probably consider it an intrusion into your personal life, but that's the way I am. And to be honest, I don't know if I'm ever going to change."
"So you're saying that you'll keep following me forever?"
"No," he said quickly. "I won't do it again. I was just explaining why I did it before. And trust me, I didn't threaten those guys or try to intimidate them. I talked to them. I explained that Ben meant a lot to me and that being his father was the most important thing in my life. You may not always agree with the way I parent him, but if you think back a couple of years, it wasn't always like this. He used to enjoy coming over to my place. Now he doesn't. But I haven't changed. He's changed. Not in a bad way. Growing up is normal, and that's all he's been doing. And maybe I need to realize and accept the fact that he's getting older." She said nothing. In the silence, Keith drew a long breath. "I also told those men that I didn't want you to get hurt. I know that might sound like I was being possessive, but I wasn't. I said it like a brother would have said it, like Drake would have said it. As in, if you like her, if you respect her, just make sure you treat her that way. That's all I said to them." He shrugged. "I don't know. Maybe some of them took it the wrong way because I'm a deputy or because of my last name. But I can't help those things. Believe me, the last thing I want is for you to be unhappy. It might not have worked out between us, but you're the mother of my son, and you always will be. Keith's gaze fell as he shuffled his feet. You have every reason to be angry with me. I was wrong. Yes, you were. Beth remained where she stood, arms crossed. Like I said, I'm sorry, and it's never going to happen again. She didn't respond right away. Okay, she finally said. I'm going to hold you to that. He flashed a quick, almost defeated smile. Fair enough. Is that it? She bent to retrieve 3 beanbags from the closet floor. Actually, I also wanted to talk to you about Logan Tebow. There's something you should know about him. She held up her hands to stop him. Don't even go there. He wasn't dissuaded. Instead, he took a step forward, kneading the brim of his hat. I'm not going to talk to him unless you want me to talk to him. I want to make that clear. Believe me, Beth, this is serious. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't. I'm here because I care about you. His chutzpah nearly took her breath away. Do you honestly expect me to believe you have my best interests at heart after admitting that you've been spying on me for years? And that you were responsible for ruining any chance I had of finding a relationship? This has nothing to do with those things. Let me guess. You think he's using drugs, right? I have no idea. But I should warn you that he hasn't been honest with you. You have no idea whether he's been honest with me. Now get out. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to hear what you have to say. Then ask him yourself, Clayton interrupted. Ask him whether he came to Hampton to find you. I'm done, she declared, moving toward the door. And if you so much as touch me on the way out, I'm going to scream for help. She walked past him, and as she was about to cross the threshold, Keith sighed audibly. Ask him about the photograph, he said. His comment brought her to a halt. What? Keith's expression was as serious as she'd ever seen it. The photograph he got from Drake. Chapter 27 Clayton. Clayton knew by her expression that he had her attention, but wasn't sure she understood the implications. He has a photograph of you, he went on, and when he first got to town, he flashed it around Decker's pool hall. Tony was there that night, and he saw it. Actually, he called me right away because he thought the guy's story sounded weird, but I didn't think much of it. Last weekend, though, Tony came by to tell me that he recognized Tebow when he was playing the piano at church. Beth could only stare at him. I don't know if Drake gave it to him, or if he took it from Drake, but I figure that's the only thing that makes sense. Both Drake and Tebow were in the Marines, and according to Tony, the picture was an older one, taken a few years ago. He hesitated. I know that what I told you about the way I behaved might make it seem like I'm trying to run him off, but I'm not going to talk to him. I do think that you should, however, and I'm not saying this because I'm your ex-husband. I'm saying this as a deputy sheriff. Beth wanted to walk away, but couldn't seem to find the will to move. Think about it. He had a picture of you, and based only on that, he walked across the country to find you. I don't know why, but I can make a pretty good guess. He was obsessed with you, even though you'd never met. Like someone who gets obsessed with movie stars. And what did he do? He hunted you down. But seeing you from afar, or simply meeting you, wasn't enough. Instead, he had to become part of your life. That's what dangerous stalkers do, Beth. His tone was calm and professional, which only intensified the dread she'd begun to feel. By your expression, I know that all of this is news to you. You're wondering if I'm telling the truth or if I'm lying, and my track record isn't perfect. But please, for Ben's sake, For your own sake, ask him about it. I can be there if you want me to be there, or I could even send another deputy if you'd prefer that. Or you can call someone else, your friend Melody. I just want you to understand how serious this is, how creepy and weird this is. This is scary stuff, and I can't impress on you enough how important it is that you take it seriously, too. His mouth was set in a straight line as he set the file on a child's desk beside him. This is some general information on Logan Tebow. I didn't have time to dig too deep, and I can get in big trouble for even letting you see this. But since I don't know what else he hasn't told you... He trailed off before looking up at her again. Think about what I told you. And be careful, okay?
Chapter 28 Beth. She could barely see through the windshield, but this time it had less to do with the rain than her inability to concentrate. After Keith had left, she kept blinking in confusion as she stared at the file, trying to make sense of the things her ex had told her. Logan had Drake's photograph. Logan had become obsessed with her. Logan had decided to seek her out. Logan had hunted her down. She found it hard to breathe, and it had been all she could do to go to the office and tell the principal that she had to go home. The principal had taken one look at her face and agreed, offering to cover her class the rest of the afternoon. Nana would pick up Ben after school, Beth informed him. On the drive home, her mind flashed from one image to the next, a kaleidoscope of sight and sound and smell. She tried to convince herself that Keith was lying, grasping for a way to rationalize his news. It was possible, especially considering the way he'd lied in the past. And yet, Keith had been serious, more professional than personal, and he'd told her some things he could easily check. He knew she would ask Logan about it. He wanted her to ask Logan, which meant... She squeezed the wheel, possessed by a feverish need to talk to Logan. He would clear this up. He had to be able to clear this up. Water from the river now stretched across the road, but in her preoccupied state, she didn't realize it until she plowed into the water. She jerked forward as the car almost came to a stop. The river flowed around her, and she thought the water would stall the engine, but the car continued to roll forward into ever deeper water, before finally emerging in a shallower patch. By the time Beth reached the house, she wasn't even sure what to feel, other than confused. One instant, she felt angry and betrayed and manipulated. In the next, she was able to convince herself that it couldn't be true, that Keith had lied to her again. As she came up the drive, she found herself scanning the rain-swept grounds for Logan. Up ahead, through low-hanging mist, she could see lights on in the house. She considered going in to talk to Nana, longing for Nana's clarity and common sense to straighten everything out. But when she saw the lights on in the office and noted the propped-open door, she felt something catch in her throat. She turned the wheel in the direction of the office, telling herself that Logan didn't have the picture, that the whole thing had been a mistake. She bounced through muddy puddles, the rain coming so hard now that the wipers couldn't keep up. On the office porch, she saw Zeus lying near the door, his head raised. She pulled to a stop out front and ran for the porch, rain stinging her face. Zeus approached her, nosing at her hand. She ignored him as she walked inside, expecting to find Logan at the desk. He wasn't there. The door that led from the office to the kennel stood open. She steeled herself, pausing in the middle of the office. As shadows moved in the darkened corridor, she waited as Logan emerged into the light. "Hey, Elizabeth," he said. "I didn't expect to see you." He trailed off. "What happened?" Staring at him, she felt her emotions threaten to boil over. Her mouth suddenly felt papery dry, and she didn't know how to start or what to say. Logan said nothing, sensing her volatile state. She closed her eyes, feeling on the verge of tears, then drew a careful breath. "Why did you come to Hampton?" she finally asked. "I want the truth this time." He didn't move. "I told you the truth," he said. "Did you tell me everything?"
He hesitated for a fraction of a second before answering.
I've never lied to you, he said, his voice quiet.
That's not what I asked, she snapped. I asked if you've been hiding anything.
He appraised her carefully. Where's this coming from?
That doesn't matter.
This time, she heard the anger in her tone. I just want to know why you came to Hampton. I told you.
Do you have a picture of me?
Logan said nothing.
Answer the question.
She took a step toward him, biting out the words.
Do you have a picture of me?
She wasn't sure how she expected him to react, but other than a soft exhale, he didn't flinch.
Yes, he said.
The one I gave Drake?
Yes, he said again.
With his answer, she felt her whole world begin to topple like a row of dominoes. All at once, everything made sense. The way he'd stared at her when they first met. The reason he was willing to work for such a low wage. Why he'd befriended Nana and Ben, and all his talk about destiny.
He had the photo. He'd come to Hampton to find her. He'd tracked her down like prey.
All at once, it was difficult to breathe.
Oh, my God.
It's not what you think. He stretched his hand toward her, and she absently watched it draw closer before she finally realized what was happening. With a start, she reeled back, desperate to put more space between them. All of it had been a lie.
Don't touch me.
Elizabeth.
My name is Beth.
She stared at him as if he were a stranger until he lowered his arm. His voice was a whisper when he tried again.
I can explain.
Explain what? She demanded. That you stole the picture from my brother? That you walked across the country to find me? That you fell in love with an image?
It wasn't like that, he said, shaking his head.
She didn't hear him. All she could do was stare at him, wondering if anything he'd said was true.
You stalked me, she said, almost as if talking to herself. You lied to me. You used me.
You don't understand.
Understand? You want me to understand?
I didn't steal the photo, he said. His voice remained steady and even. I found the photo in Kuwait, and I posted it on a bulletin board where I thought it would be claimed, but no one ever claimed it.
And so, you took it back.
She shook her head in disbelief.
Why? Because you had some sick and twisted idea about me?
No, he said, his voice rising for the first time. The sound startled her, slowing her thoughts, if only for an instant. I came here because I owed you.
You owed me? She blinked. What does that even mean?
The photo. It saved me. Though she heard him plainly, she couldn't comprehend the words. She waited for more, and in the steady silence that followed, she realized she found them chilling somehow. The hairs on her arms prickled, and she took another step back.
Who are you?
She hissed.
What do you want from me?
I don't want anything, and you know who I am.
No, I don't. I don't know anything about you.
Let me explain.
Then explain why, if this was all so pure and true, that you didn't tell me about the photograph when you first came here,
she shouted, her voice echoing in the room. In her mind's eye, she saw Drake and all the details of the night the photo was taken. She pointed a finger at him.
Why didn't you say, I found this in Iraq, and I figured you might want it back? Why didn't you tell me when we were talking about Drake?
I don't know.
It wasn't your photo to keep. Don't you get that? It wasn't meant for you. It was for my brother, not for you. It was his, and you had no right to keep it from me.
Logan's voice was almost a whisper. I didn't mean to hurt you. Her eyes bored into him, piercing him with the force of her rage.
This whole thing is a sham, isn't it? You found this photo and came up with some twisted fantasy in which you could play the starring role. You played me from the moment we met. You took your time to find out what you could do to make it seem like you were the perfect guy for me.
And you thought that because you were obsessed with me, you could trick me into falling in love with you.
She saw Logan flinch at her words, and she went on.
You planned all this from the very beginning. It's sick, and it's wrong, and I can't believe I fell for it.
He rocked back slightly on his heels, stunned by her words. I admit that I wanted to meet you, he said. But you're wrong about the reason. I didn't come here to trick you into falling in love with me. I know it sounds crazy, but I came to believe that the photograph kept me from harm and that I owed you somehow. Even if I didn't know what that meant or what would come of it. But I didn't plan anything after I got here. I took the job and then I fell in love with you. Her expression didn't soften as he spoke. Instead, she slowly began to shake her head.
Can you even hear what you're saying?
I knew you wouldn't believe it. That's why I didn't tell you.
Don't try to justify your lies. You got caught up in some sick fantasy, and you won't even admit it.
Stop calling it that, he shouted back. You're the one who's not listening. You're not even trying to understand what I'm saying.
Why should I try to understand? You've been lying to me since the beginning. You've been using me since the beginning.
I haven't used you, he said, forcing his back straight, regaining his composure. And I didn't lie about the photo. I just didn't tell you about it because I didn't know how to tell you in a way that wouldn't make you think I was crazy. She started to shake her head.
Don't you even think of blaming this on me. You're the one who lied. You're the one who kept secrets. I told you everything. I gave my heart to you. I let my son become attached to you, she shouted.
As she went on, her voice broke and she could feel the tears beginning to form.
I went to bed with you because I thought you were someone I could trust, but now I know that I can't. Can you imagine how that makes me feel? To know this whole thing was some sort of charade?
His voice was soft. Please, Elizabeth. Beth, just listen.
I don't want to listen. I've already been lied to enough.
Don't be like this.
You want me to listen?
She screamed.
Listen to what? That you obsessed over a picture and came to find me because you believed it kept you safe? That's insane. And the most disturbing thing is you don't even recognize that your explanation only makes you sound psychotic.
He stared at her, and she saw his jaw clench shut. She felt a shudder run through her. She was done with this. Done with him.
I want it back,
she gritted out.
I want the photo that I gave to Drake.
When he didn't respond, she reached over to the window ledge and grabbed a small flower pot. She threw it at him, shouting,
Where is it? I want it!
Logan ducked as the pot whizzed overhead and crashed into the wall behind him. For the first time, Zeus barked in confusion.
It's not yours, she shouted.
Logan stood straight again.
I don't have it. Where is it?
She demanded. Logan paused before answering. I gave it to Ben, he admitted. Her eyes narrowed.
Get out!
Logan hesitated before finally moving toward the door. Beth stepped away, keeping her distance from him. Zeus swiveled his gaze from Logan to Beth and back again, before padding slowly after Logan. At the door, Logan stopped and turned toward her. I swear on my life, I didn't come here to fall in love with you, or to try to make you fall in love with me, but I did. She stared at him.
I told you to go, and I meant it.
With that, he turned and strode out into the storm. Chapter 29 Tebow. Despite the rain, Tebow couldn't imagine going back to his house. He wanted to be outside. It didn't feel right to be warm and dry. He'd wanted to purge himself of what he had done, of all the lies he had told. She'd been right. He hadn't been honest with her. Despite the hurt he felt at some of the things she'd said,